This is the Human Centric Investing Podcast with John Deal, where we look at the world of investing through the eyes of our clients. Take it away, John.
Hello, financial advisors. This is John Deal, Senior Vice President of Strategic Markets at Hartford Funds. Welcome to our first episode of the Human Centric Investing Podcast. With me today is Dr. Joe Coughlin, Director of the MIT Age Lab. Joe and his team at the lab are researching the challenges and opportunities of longevity, as well as consumer lifestyle, and of particular interest to all of us, how that impacts decision-making, not just in terms of lifestyle, but also in terms of finances, financial planning, and retirement. And so, Joe, you know, when I think about longevity, because we do a lot of joint work together on longevity, you know, I've heard you talk about longevity differently than I've heard many different people talk about. Oftentimes, we hear the kind of trite demographic statistics that are trotted out about, you know, the baby boom, the pig in the python, the however you want to describe it. But Joe, you have a different narrative that I've heard you discuss called the 8,000-day concept. Would you mind telling us a little bit about what that is?
Well, John, thanks for having me. It's great to be here and to work with all of you at Hartford Funds. Yes, absolutely. The 8,000-day concept, I was thinking about the fact that retirement has actually gotten to be, shall we say, quite old. Our vision of retirement planning is somewhat staid. It uses many of the same photographs across all products, services, and providers of beaches and golf courses and an occasional bike ride in a semi-urban area. And really, one of the things we've been thinking about here at the Age Lab is that we need a new narrative. Stories are probably the oldest form of technology that truly engage, enchant, and educate, if you will, people and certainly clients. And so let me give you an idea of where the 8,000 days came from. Some simple math. You know, from the age of zero to roughly college graduation, if you do the math, is just about 8,000 days. From college graduation, say 21, 22 years old, to what one might consider to be midlife crisis in your mid-40s, mid to late 40s, guess what? 8,000 days. And then suddenly, from about that period of midlife crisis to near retirement age, yep, you guessed it, that's another 8,000 days. But here's one of the things that we have not thought about. Retirement, as we consider it today, as we plan for the finances, as we plan for our objectives, we really have a very short vision of it now. It includes that kind of healthy period and that, shall we say, very unhealthy period and nothing in between. But guess what? The average person who has the education and the income to use a financial advisor is very likely to live past 85 years old. And guess what? From retirement to past 85 years old to about 87, you guessed it, is 8,000 days. So John, the 8,000 days concept is that this is not planning for your father and mother's brief retirement period with a few cruises in between, that this is planning for a full 25, maybe 30% of your life.
Well, Joe, we've worked together in the financial services industry now for at least the past 10 years. I guess my question for you is, you get to observe many different firms and channels and advisors of all stripes. Do you think that the practice of a typical financial advisor is adapting to this new story of retirement? Or are you concerned in terms of how advisors are maybe or maybe not repositioning their practices? What are your thoughts as you look at the financial services industry?
You know, in fairness to any industry, and particularly financial services, one might take the position, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But one of the things that I've noticed is that there is a sea change in consumer expectations, that they expect you to be good at managing money. They expect you with any hope of not losing money and, in fact, making them money. But to truly excite and delight the customer or the client, financial advisors now have to start engaging and telling a new story of not just how much it's going to cost to live in retirement, but what I'm going to do in retirement. And so far, I've not seen that many advisors taking this up because, frankly, for 10, 20, 30 plus years, they've done very good with just doing the numbers. But today they've got a new threat. Algorithms and robos and the like are doing the numbers, perhaps not as good as the human touch, but unless they develop a new story, a new strategy of engagement, robos are likely not just to eat lunch, but they're likely to invite themselves at the table in a way that advisors may not be prepared for.
So, Joe, we talk about, I know in these 8,000-day segments, I've heard you say that for some of these segments, the script has already been written, yet for the last segment, not so much. What do you mean the script has already been written?
You know, we don't like to think about this because we pride ourselves, at least most of us do, on our individualism, if you will. But generally speaking, if you think about from 0 to 21, 22 years old, if your family has you college-bound, you pretty much know you're going to be going to school and doing your homework and doing a few things you don't want to tell your parents about and going to college. After college, with any luck, you get a job, pay off a few loans, perhaps get married, have a few kids, whatever it might be, and move on from there. You register at the right stores to get the right glassware and plates. I mean, we have rituals and retail and all kinds of stories that guide us into our mid-40s and 50s. And then, of course, when we're in our 40s and 50s and beyond, we're at the peak of our income, peak of our career. Our children are getting older. We're going to soccer practice. There are things to do, products to buy, things that are accepted as that's what a grown-up does. But come about 65, 67, we run out of storyline. We might walk a daughter down the aisle. We might actually go on a few cruise ships and have a few bouts of norovirus. But the fact of the matter is that after about 67, we run out of story. We run out of ritual. We run out of myths, if you will, as to what to do. And that 8,000 days is just as long, and in many cases, perhaps even more important than the previous years and days that we have spent.
So, Joe, as you think about that last segment, which I guess one of the complicating factors is, look, no one, unless you were born with an expiration date on your birth certificate, knows exactly what that last segment is going to look like just in terms of the number of years. But you've taken an approach by maybe with all the study you've done of getting to observe people in that last segment, if you will. I know you've proposed a couple of almost phases within that last segment. Can you tell us a little bit about what those phases are and kind of how you've observed them and how those came about?
Sure. And I think one of the things that's important to stress to our listeners is that generally speaking, most of us do not have a clear idea of what we're going to be doing in retirement. You know, there are many of us who will be asked, what are you going to be doing on day one in retirement? And generally speaking, we know what we're going to be doing. We're going to be unpacking our boxes. And frankly, even on day 362, we may be having some fun walking that fabled beach on many a brochure. The question that clients are looking for and grasping for is there anyone to help me navigate what I'm going to be doing, shall we say, on day 3,114? And so the 8,000 days is not just one long continuum. Here at the Age Lab, we've actually thought about it probably being at least four phases. And they're not evenly distributed because we are different by our resources and our health and the health of our loved ones. So they're not going to be necessarily, you know, very clean breaks, but they may be slow transitions or fast breaks due to an event such as a fall or a health condition or something that has affected a loved one. So, John, what I suggest is that we've identified four different retirements within what we call retirement. And what's interesting about them is that while we speak a lot longevity risk, that is losing or not having enough money or outrunning our wealth span as our lifespan expands, there are other resources that we need to think about, our cognitive resources, our physical well-being, in fact, even our friends, our social network, if you will. So that first phase is what we call managing ambiguity. And this is where we're kind of not sure where we are in retirement. Perhaps we've retired, but now we're consulting. Maybe we're working part-time. Maybe we haven't sold that small business entirely and we still have some interest in the operations. Or frankly, even if we're not working for pay, maybe we are volunteering with great gusto that might as well be, shall we say, a full-time job. So what we're seeing in the future of retirement, shall we say, is very gray in terms of that one-time clean break.
And Joe, I think that's a mistake we see many advisors make, is just assuming that everyone's dream is at some point to kind of hang up the cleats and head to some warm place where there's a beach and kind of sit back on a lawn chair. But what I see happening quite a bit is people are talking about working later into retirement. And since we're not in such a labor-intensive society anymore, many of us will have the flexibility to be able to do so, albeit probably not in the same form or fashion as we did for the first 20 or 30 years of our career, correct?
Absolutely, because it's no longer about working longer as a matter of just money. It certainly is that for many people, but it's about money and meaning. Think about this. The majority of us spend far more waking hours with our work colleagues in our work environment than we ever do with our own family. Now, that may be a sad social commentary, but that is the way it is today. So when we retire and we make that so-called clean break and walk our box out the door, in that box is our sense of our identity, it is our sense of our social network, and frankly, a man or a woman needs to have a reason to get up in the morning.
So if the first phase is ambiguity, Joe, where does that lead us to next?
Well, the second one is managing big decisions. And I think, frankly, for the rest of the phases, the 8,000 days concept, as I've developed it, really calls into question that retirement is a time of relaxation and kicking back. In fact, I want you to think about this. Retirement is a lot of work. So managing big decisions, give an example, should I downsize? Should I move? You know, to show my own age and to quote the group The Clash, should I stay or should I go? Many people are trying to decide, do I sell the home in the suburbs and move into the city? Do we move closer to the children? Do we start thinking about senior housing as an option, from independent living through to nursing care? So this is at this point where we're saying, gee, do I really now stop work altogether? Where should we live? How should we get around? How do we start to get into this realm, this new realm called retirement?
And Joe, how, from your observation, can a financial advisor participate in that phase, if you will? Is it important in terms of just the investment strategies that they offer, or is there something else that you think is a major component of how they can help?
Yeah, this is one of the misgivings of objective-based planning. Objective-based planning is great if you're picking a number and we decide on a strategy to get to a certain financial level. But objective-based planning in a world that we have no roadmap, that we don't have many examples in our past, let alone our parents or grandparents, of what it's like to live 25 plus years, if you will, past one's retirement. A financial advisor can be of great value simply by asking the questions. Have you thought about where you want to live? Yes, if you want to age in place, that might be a great idea to stay in the home where you've built a marriage, a mortgage, and many memories, but at what cost? If you do want to move, are you leaving a social network behind? So the financial advisor's role today is, yes, owning that conversation around money and facilitating financial independence, but also putting in front of the client, the couple, or indeed the family, some of the choices they need to make today while they have the finances and typically the physical and cognitive resources to plan ahead for the time when they may be living alone, where they may have less cognitive function, and frankly, they will have less physical and financial resources as well.
Joe, if we move past big decisions to the fourth phase you've identified, what's next?
I would say this is about the intersection point, or where the lines cross over, where longevity risk really starts to escalate and our resources begin to decline. And I call this phase managing complexity. Again, we have defined retirement as a period of relaxation. But try to think about all the things you now have to manage in older age. You are now managing a home that at one point was easy to do, from changing light bulbs to cleaning the house to getting appliances fixed, to now where it's a little bit more difficult. You may not be in the social network and have friends that can give you the advice of who should come and fix the house as easily as you once did. Changing light bulbs is not necessarily something you can't do, but something maybe you don't want to do, or your spouse certainly does not want you up on a ladder doing. How about medications? Think about health is now a bigger issue. most people, particularly in their 70s, are going to be managing upwards of four or five medications per day that have to be at certain doses and certain requirements with certain diet restrictions. And you're now getting some very serious questions about how to spend down your money in such a way that it's going to last you a long time. And you're getting things in the mail from your health insurer that may be saying, you owe $800, but it will also say this is not a bill. So you've got to start cutting through the administrivia, if you will, of aging a long time. So indeed, managing complexity becomes complex because you have a lot of things coming at you, just as your resources, physical, cognitive, social, and financial, are beginning to decline.
So even helping someone be able to maybe organize or give them a framework about what maybe they're moving through sharing the experiences of other clients that I've helped, like that person across the table, may be something that that client finds valuable. And I would ask you, Joe, at this phase, do you think it's crucial that whether it's a family member, a friend, or someone who is kind of involved with us as we age, that they be brought into the conversation?
This would definitely be the time to, hopefully you've identified earlier in the relationship with a client, the trusted network, which could be family, certainly could be children, but it also may be siblings. And in many cases, we're finding increasingly with our research, it may be a friend that is more trusted than anything else to bring in, to be able to assure that you are both cognitively well, or that you are seeing your choices clearly. Or frankly, that you are articulating some of the concerns you have with your financial advisor with the courage of that only a friend or a family member can bring to the meeting. So yes, financial advisors at this point really need to be addressing the relationship, not just with the client, but with the client's support network, which is typically the oldest adult daughter and family.
And Joe, maybe that's something, you know, not to step too far back, but maybe that's one of the big decisions in the big decision phase, which is, I'm going to need someone to go along with me. Or if I haven't even thought about that, perhaps it's during that phase that the advisor introduces the idea, you know, while we're still healthy and while we're still cognitively able to make a lot of those decisions, to say, look, you know, this segment of life may go on for a very long time, but at some point you may need some help. Begin to think about who that party would be that's going to help you through some of these things. I think for some people, that's pretty obvious. For other people, that's something that will require a good bit of thought, and it may change over time. But I think important for financial advisors is setting the expectation that that is something that they may need some help with.
Absolutely.
And with that, Joe, how about the last of the four segments? What is that? How do you describe that? And kind of what are the characteristics there?
Sure. The last segment that I referred to is called managing end of life, or frankly, living solo. That unfortunately, many of us will end up living alone. I want you to think about this. 30% of the over 65 plus live by themselves, and more than 43% of older women over the age of 70 live by themselves. So while this phase of life is typically characterized by health proxies and wills and other issues like that, and those are all very important and part of planning ahead, there are other things to think about too. Where will you live? Who will provide you care? What are the trusted sources of support that you can have? Who will be the proxies, not just in terms of health decisions, but the proxies to help you get through everyday life? The majority of people spend their latter years by themselves in their own homes. So it is not just a matter of what nursing home am I going to go to and who's going to pick the surgeon I may need. Frankly, there are many other things that we have to address. And this typically has been a female-related issue because she lives longer, she tends to provide the majority of care, and as I said, the statistics are she is more likely to live alone in later life than a male.
So, Joe, I think it's important, and I think you hinted at this when we began talking, but when we consider these four phases, a lot of times I think when people talk about demographics and generations, we want to kind of put age corridors on these different phases, right? So it'd be real neat and tidy if we could say, well, the ages of 65 to 73 are the honeymoon phase or the ambiguity stage, and then big decisions come between 73 and 80. But that's not always the case, is it?
No. In fact, birthdays are terrible predictors at about just about anything. Generally speaking, it is your health and cognitive well-being that will predict these things individually. But also, it's not all about you. It's also about your loved ones. You might be able to work well into your 70s, 80s, and beyond. But if your spouse or a partner has a health issue or a tragic event, that will immediately throw you into the phase that is further down the road than you expected.
So, Joe, as we kind of wrap up our segment for today, if you were to think about advisors who are rethinking their business and they really want to become what we would refer to as a longevity solutions advisor, helping people kind of navigate these challenges of longevity, how might you introduce this concept of 8,000 days as an advisor? What are some of the things that you might start looking at differently? Any suggestions for the advisors who are listening?
I think one of the things that clients are starving for is to understand what retirement's going to be, to get them past the stereotypes of beaches and bicycles and golf courses, and to say that there is a great opportunity here to chart out not years in retirement, but decades in retirement, and what that actually might be. And so this transfers the advisor's role from being an advisor and a financial manager to now being a navigator. You're telling a story that engages. In fact, what I'd like the advisors out there to think about is that by using the 8,000 days story or paradigm, if you will, it's an opportunity for you to create a great connection with your client that's about money, but includes their entire life. It's beyond money. It's about having a deeper conversation with them and with people around them about what they will trust and what they will do. And frankly, ultimately, it's about providing the content that they need to make decisions about how they will live better and longer in life tomorrow.
So, Joe, one last question for you. As an advisor, would it be important for me to try and spell out at least what I would see a client's retirement looking like if they themselves can't define that? Or should I take a shorter-term view, maybe what we're going to be doing or what they want to be doing in the next 5 to 10 years, knowing that some of those decisions we're going to be needing to deal with down the line? It seems to me that sometimes clients are a little bit overwhelmed by, as you said, trying to describe what life looks like 20 or 30 years from now when I haven't even figured out what I'll be doing in the next 12 months. Is that how you see it? I mean, how should I as an advisor think about that?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, the psychology literature gives a somewhat trite but powerful example as to why phone numbers are 7 digits. The fact of the matter is that we can't digest that much information or that many issues at one time. So an advisor is much like an educator. He or she has to know how to chunk it out. So managing ambiguity is one set of discussions and opportunities and solution sets. Managing big decisions is next, and complexity and end of life. So chunking it out so that it can be digested, appreciated, but connecting me to solutions that will help each of those stages, not just to money, will make the big difference as to whether or not this advisor is helping me navigate or simply making me feel overwhelmed and stressed.
Well, Joe, thanks very much for your time today. And for the advisors who are listening to our podcast, we ask you to check back regularly for our next broadcast. Hopefully, we've given you some food for thought today in terms of positioning statements, running your business, and how we can better serve our clients in the years ahead and not only meet their expectations, but exceed them to create a remarkable experience with your firm. And so for Joe Coughlin, Joe, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, John.
And for all of us at Hartford Funds, thanks, and we'll talk to you again soon.
This podcast is intended for use by financial professionals or in conjunction with the advice of a financial professional. It is intended to be educational in nature and should not be construed as individual investment advice or a recommendation or solicitation to buy, sell, or hold any security or to adopt any investment strategy. It does not constitute legal or tax advice or fiduciary advice pursuant to ERISA rules. The MITH Lab is not an affiliate or subsidiary of Hartford Funds.